The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
Coming up, we've got Jimmy with Out of the Box and guests in the house. First, we're going to listen to a presentation, Jeffrey Smith's message to the March Against Monsanto. In preparation for this afternoon's discussion, please kick back and listen to the following presentation. This is Kauai Community Radio. I'm Shoots, and I'll catch up with you in a couple weeks. Thank you so much.
And I'm in Maui, Hawaii, and I want to first say thank you all for marching against Monsanto. And I want to tell you that what's happening here in Hawaii is a microcosm of this struggle. Now, Hawaii is ground zero for the production of genetically engineered seeds and also the experimentation of new GMOs. Kauai was successful in demanding from the biotech industry that they disclose how many agricultural chemicals they're using and what type. It turns out they're spraying 2 to 4 tons per week of agricultural chemicals. No wonder they're reporting a much higher percentage of birth defects and cancer on that island, especially in the areas around the spraying. Now here in Maui, the Shaka movement has basically decided to give the citizens control. They're using a provision in the government here that allows them to vote, like a ballot initiative, to create a moratorium on GMOs and the agricultural chemicals used on those crops until they have been proven safe. So this is a very exciting program that the entire world is looking at, and that once they hand in the petitions this week and get approved, they'll be on the ballot in November, where the citizens can say, you're not protecting us, Maui County, you're not protecting us, Hawaii government, you're not protecting us, United States government, we have to do it ourselves. So this is an excellent model for what's happening around the world. Now, what we're seeing, what you see behind me, is really a paradise. What you're not seeing are the level of poisons and misery that this industry is creating among the people, although we hear story after story. Now, as I've been traveling around the country, I've been hearing similar stories of people, and I say, how many of you in the audience have removed GMOs from your diet and noticed an improvement in your health? And I can tell you, in about 100 different events, the number one symptom that people get better from when they remove GMOs is gastrointestinal disorders. Crohn's disease, irritable bowel, inflammatory bowel. Also, autoimmune disease, immune system problems like allergies, asthma, headaches, brain fog, aggression, depression, symptoms of autism. We hear all sort of whole range of issues related to when people get rid of GMOs, how they feel better. Now, what we're looking at this time in this world are two possible futures. Monsanto's future was described to its Arthur Andersen Consulting years ago, who asked the executive to describe the ideal future of Monsanto executives, and they described a world in which 100% of all commercial seeds were genetically engineered and patented. And Andersen worked backwards from that goal to create the strategy and tactics to achieve it. Now, although their fast-track plans have been dismantled by tipping points in Europe and rejections in different countries, they still have the same plan to replace nature. But it has expanded. It's not just the seeds, it's also the insects and the livestock, the trees. Basically, they want to eliminate the products of the billions of years of evolution and replace it with designer organisms using designer genes designed for their profit and control. Now, that's their ideal future. Our ideal future is to uphold the nature of nature, to make sure the intelligence of nature continues in its perfect plan, and guided, of course, by crossbreeding, but not blasting genes into genomes, causing massive collateral damage and unsuspecting side effects. So now we're at a pivotal point right here. The biotech industry still has a plan to replace all of the foods that we eat, and basically all of it is in the pipeline somewhere. And over here, there's fantastic advances in natural, organic, sustainable, agroecological growing of food and growing of forests, etc. So we're at the pivot point. Now it turns out that in 100 years, when they look back at this time, they may say that the thing that protected the genetic integrity of our planet for all future generations turned out to be the sales of grape nuts at Walmart. It sounds bizarre, but it may be true. Here's why. The most effective way that we have found to get rid of GMOs has been through a tipping point of consumer rejection. That's why it was kicked out of Europe. It was kicked out because the consumers became aware of it because of a high-profile food safety scandal that erupted in 1999. Within 10 weeks, it was kicked out of nearly all the food companies. Now it's just not served in Europe, not because of the government, but because of the food companies responding to the citizens. We saw a similar tipping point against bovine growth hormone and a similar tipping point against all GMOs in the natural product sector last year, ushered in by a statement by the president of Whole Foods that said when a project becomes non-GMO project verified, it increases sales by 15% to 30%. Now imagine if you're selling through Whole Foods or other natural products stores and you hear that your competitor is going non-GMO project verified and it will increase their sales by 15% to 30%. It means it'll decrease your sales by the appropriate amount. Now that's the foundation of a tipping point, the market share battle. And that's what we're seeing right now in Walmart, Safeway, etc. We have Cheerios, non-GMO in its original brand, marked on the side of the package, Grape Nuts on the front of the package. The side of the package is not so strong, the front of the package is very strong because you get the point of sale interest. So if Grape Nuts increases sales in the conventional supermarkets, the rest of the food industry realizes, I can't afford to wait till my competitor declares non-GMO before me. So we are right now in the window of opportunity. And so the Institute for Responsible Technology, we're educating the targeted demographic groups that shop in the traditional supermarkets, but who would be more inclined, more receptive to the message that we know changes people's diet. So we are educating moms with stories by moms who've switched their kids, their whole family to non-GMO and shared those stories with us. We're educating pet owners, same thing with the cats and dogs as with the children. We're educating healthcare professionals who are now by the thousands prescribing non-GMO diets. We're educating the chronically ill who are suffering from diseases we think are related to GMOs. And of course, there's the religious people who think GMO means God move over. So we invite you to go to responsibletechnology.org. You can support us by signing up for our newsletter and then posting and sharing what we produce. You can provide donations towards our five-year plan to end GMOs, both in food and feed. And you can also participate in our Tipping Point Network. Certainly get involved in the local efforts to label. And we may see a preemption of state labeling by the FDA. And so the FDA may say, oh no, we don't want a patchwork of state labeling laws. We're going to do it nationally. And then they're going to put it on mothballs for years. But what might move the FDA to actually put in a meaningful labeling law is a tipping point. Because once the food companies remove GMOs or start to, their objections to mandatory labeling may completely disappear and they may end up on our side of the negotiation table. So even for mandatory labeling, the tipping point is critical. So first of all, I want you to know, having traveled on this issue and spoken on this issue and worked on this issue for 18 years in about 40 countries, I have never seen this opportunity so ripe in the United States. Back in 2007, 15% of Americans said that they avoided or reduced GMOs. In 2010, it was 25%. In 2013, it was 39%. Now, in 2007, 38% of the people said that they were avoiding or reducing growth hormones. The next year is when Walmart kicked it out. So we're about the same level of rejection of GMOs as we were back then when the bovine growth hormone tipping point occurred. So we're right now absolutely on the edge of a tremendous victory. And where does that victory come from? It comes from us. It comes from all of us making healthier non-GMO choices and telling our friends and family and community about the same. So I wanted to give you the good news that we're actually winning. I don't look at the Obama administration for the signals of success. I don't look at governments in general. I think what happened in Vermont passing the labeling law is outstanding. Of course, Maine was great and Connecticut was great. Then we have to support the labeling initiatives in Colorado and Oregon and all the legislative efforts. But what I see as most effective and most important is hitting the tipping point of consumer rejection, and we are almost there. So we may not have to march on Monsanto very long. We may have to bury their ashes, and that will be very fine. And I wouldn't mind burying the ashes behind me in this beautiful ocean here in Maui in Hawaii. So thank you all for your, let's all thank each other for our collective support of this global endeavor to protect our ideal future, and that is to protect the nature of nature. Safe eating.
All right, thank you for that message. That was Jeffrey Smith, And that is his message to the March Against Monsanto 2014. We'll have Jeffrey in studio shortly, along with Out of the Box and Jimmy Trujillo, coming up shortly. And in the meantime, this musical interlude by Plaid. This is new music off of Plaid's album, Ready Prince. You're listening to Kauai Community Radio.
Here we go, check, check. We got the microphone on. DJ Shoots in the background. Thanks for the transition. Appreciate this. We got a full house in the booth. We've got Dr. Tyrone Hayes. Go ahead and say aloha in that mic and see if I got you up.
Aloha. How's it going?
There we go. One more time.
Aloha.
I think that was it. And, Jeffrey Smith, are you there?
I'm here.
We can hear you there. Right on. Tim Kalai, thank you for manning the phones. Dustin Barca is here. How's that sounding? There we go. You're on three. You're on two. You're on one. And this is Jimmy Trujillo hosting another Out of the Box special. We have little less than 2 hours, hour and 40 minutes of conversation for Kauai. We also have some off-island listeners, so mahalo for joining us here on our community radio. And Tyrone Hayes coming off a island-wide tour, statewide tour. You were just recently in Maui, and before that in the Big Island, or was it the Big Island and then Maui and then Oahu? Tell me how your itinerary has been flowing.
Oh, I think it went Maui first, Oahu, the Big Island, Molokai was somewhere in there. And then Kauai. I get them all mixed up now. It's been a whirlwind.
There you go. It's been a solid week of lectures, presentations, some cultural sharing, and some deeper understanding of what's going on in our island state.
Oh, I've been well cared for. I haven't been bored, let's put it that way.
And well fed, I understand, too.
I haven't been bored or hungry.
There you go. But mahalo's for that. And Jeffrey, how long have you been in the state? Are you traveling around as well, going from island to island?
Well, I was in Maui for a week,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm here till Tuesday. I'm giving a talk in Waimea in the evening on Saturday.
Saturday evening.
Also tonight in, where's my talk tonight?
Common Ground.
Common Ground in Kilauea up
That's
here
right,
on the North Shore.
And other than that, I'm going to kick back and get some hiking and some Kauai sunshine.
Nice. Good for you. Go visit the wonderful ocean resources we have out there and the mountain resources. From Mauka to Makai, we've got it all. We're blessed to call Kauai home. We're very fortunate to have in the booth a warrior for the people, Dustin Barca, mayoral candidate, and running for the people of Kauai. Dustin, share with us a little bit of your campaign is just starting to get underway.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, and mm-hmm. thanks to our listeners out there. Our campaign just kicking off right now. We're putting on an event all weekend from the 29th through the 1st. I'm gonna sail and paddle the Napali coast on the 29th,
mm-hmm.
and run from Polahali to Waimea, and we're gonna have an event there. And the next morning, I'm going to run to Lihue, from Waimea to Lihue.
Ooh, long run.
Yeah. But, it's a journey. It's not a race.
There you go.
And then, the third day, we're going to run from Lihue to Kilauea. We're going to have an event in Kilauea Town. They're having the Kilauea Town
celebration
that day. So, we're going to just lock arms with that one.
Nice.
And then our last day, we're going to run to from Kilauea to Ke'e, right where we started, and have a party at Hanalei with music and food and everything for mahalo everybody for the support and, talk story and
mm-hmm.
the whole nine yards.
The whole nine yards. Well, before we go too far down that track, I'm going to do this because just want to make sure I'm covering all my bases.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
Right on. And, you know, I just want to, for my own personal disclosure, I'm a beekeeper. I have great concerns about pesticide use. This whole notion of GMO technology is one that leaves me kind of questioning the decisions that get made up at the highest levels that say, hey, it's okay to do this stuff, and we're looking at evidence that suggests otherwise. So I welcome Jeffrey Smith from the Institute of Responsible Technology, Dr. Tyrone Hayes from the University of California, Berkeley, professor doing research on atrazine. Last night you spent a wonderful hour and a half talking story with the people of Kauai. I know for folks who weren't able to attend last night's event that it will be broadcast on Ho'ike. We did get a sound recording, so we're going to try to parcel out and be able to sample some of that and get it on our airwaves. I know, Dustin, that this issue of pesticides and GMOs is central to your campaign as well as other issues, but sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's essential to our livelihood, yeah. So, I mean, it's essential to everything we're involved in. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, the information he brings to our communities and the information we've been gaining throughout the last couple of years is just, you know, it's horrific, and it's you know, it's given us a sense of urgency to
yes.
to act now, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And act responsibly. Dr. Hayes, actually let me make sure I understand the time frame, because I think Dustin, you can be here for the whole show. You're more than welcome to stay the whole show.
Yeah,
but
I'll be
somebody has to catch a plane.
I'm flying out at 9.
Okay, so you're not in a big hurry to get out of the hot seat. And then Michael, Jeffrey, you're going to be here for the duration, or are you going to leave a little bit early?
Yeah, I have to be at the Common Ground at 6:30.
Okay, so you're 15 minutes away from there. So we won't make you stay for the bitter end unless you really want to. Phone lines will be open at 826-771 if you got questions for our guests. I think I'll start with just the question to our off-island visitors. Have you guys met before?
We had lunch today.
Had lunch today.
That was it.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard of Tyrone Hayes forever. Mm-hmm. And because what I do, one thing that I do is I document the effects, the treatment of whistleblowers. Those that who find problems with genetically engineered foods are often fired, gagged, stripped of responsibilities, threatened, denied tenure, denied funding. And so I interview them, turn it into books and movies and whatnot. And Tyrone Hayes is a whistleblower from another area, atrazine. And it's not something that's so related to GMOs, but it's close enough so that our worlds touch.
Mm-hmm. And you're familiar with the work that Jeffrey's been doing with the Institute for Responsible Technology?
Yeah, I've been getting up to speed on mm-hmm. all those kinds of things, and
mm-hmm.
it's a little new for me to start thinking of myself as a whistleblower, but I guess that's where we are, right?
Well, I was sharing with somebody this morning a little bit about last night's presentation and that you were going to be on today's show, and wasn't familiar with your story. I alluded to the New Yorker article that recently came out. You were also interviewed by Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Around that time. So more and more people are understanding the predicament, if you will, that you find yourself in, knowing what you know. And I think Dustin and I have talked about this. Once you know, how do you go back? You can't put mm-hmm. the genie back in the bottle. You know, there is no way to just turn a blind eye and say, oh, well, I guess that's just how it is. So I applaud you and your role as being a whistleblower, as being somebody with the, if you will, the letters behind your name, and kind of pushing it uphill, because, you know, on campus sometimes the research money is such, or the political influence can be significant enough to cause many people to just bow down, and I don't think that's a position that you're taking at all. So thank you for stepping up and joining us here on Kauai Community Radio. And this is your second time on Kauai?
Yes, it's my second time here.
Not your last time, I hope.
Not my last time. I'll be back. You just say the word and I'm here.
There we go. And Jeff, you've been here a couple times?
That's right.
I think I remember you. You might have been interviewed by a colleague of mine here, Katie Rose, on an afternoon. You were going to be speaking. When was the last time you were here?
I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I was here originally in 2004, and I remember when we were here, we met with someone from the Department of Agriculture,
mm-hmm.
and I asked them, what kind of precautions and requirements do you have for planting or for allowing test plots for genetically engineered crops? And there was none.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically just plant it. And we suggested that there be a method of evaluating whether contamination of the INA has taken place, and that evaluation be paid for by the companies, and that there be also catastrophic weather plans in case there's hurricanes or floods, and so that the seeds and pollen and crops were not dispersed under wide conditions, and that we also knew that there was massive economic problems with other contamination episodes, a $1 billion problem with one, for example. And so once it contaminates, it's irreversible and it can affect all exports. So there should be an insurance policy and a bond and all these things we laid out, both for the contamination and the soil and all that. And they had no money for it. They had no knowledge of it. And now, 10 years later, we see so many aspects of contamination causing another $1 billion problem with rice on the mainland. The Kona coffee industry has prevented anyone from growing outdoor genetically engineered coffee to prevent that kind of contamination. But really, the entire INA is at risk of irreversible contamination of the gene pool with no one in the government doing anything. So there is a citizen's effort out right now. There's going to be a vote in November for people to say, wait a minute, you shouldn't be planting this and spraying it until we've proven it safe. So one of the reasons I'm here is to get people aware of that's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
In response to the lack of effort and the lack of activity of the state or federal government from protecting the people and the INA.
Boy, it sure seems that there's just a deficiency in oversight or regulation, that it just isn't, whether it's EPA or USDA.
Or the FDA,
that there isn't that type of scrutiny.
Well, it's more than looking the other way. I mean, the FDA, the person in charge of policy at the FDA for the GMO policy was Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney. They created that position for him when the former Bush administration told the FDA to promote biotechnology. He then falsely claimed, or his policy did, that there was no information showing that GMOs were significantly different. Therefore, companies like Monsanto, who told us that PCBs, Agent Orange, and DDT were safe, could determine on their own if GMOs were safe, put it on the market without telling the FDA or consumers. Well, documents made public from a lawsuit showed that it was entirely a lie that the scientists working at the FDA said GMOs are different and dangerous and needed to be tested. But Taylor, after allowing an abdication of responsibility by the FDA, then went back and worked for Monsanto as their vice president, and now he's back at the FDA as the U.S. Food Safety Czar. So it's not just looking the other way. These are captured regulatory agencies. They are working for the biotech industry. And if you look at the State Department and you read the WikiLeaks, the disclosed cables back and forth between, or the emails between the ambassadors in Washington, I mean, they're basically deployed on behalf of the biotech industry, bullying other countries, saying you must take our GMOs. The ambassador to France wrote to Washington saying, please draw up a retaliation list against governments slow to respond or to accept GMOs and, quote, cause some pain. The ambassador to Spain said, we just met with the director of Monsanto in the region, and now we want to ask you to put pressure on Brussels to change the EU law regarding GMOs and to help the Spanish government create a policy that promotes genetically engineered foods. So we are in a situation right now where it's not that the government is simply looking the other way. They are working with the biotech industry and consciously ignoring the dangers. And then if you look at the state government, they're not actually filling in where they need to, and so it comes down to really the county, which is crazy. It shouldn't ever be in the hands of the people to have to protect themselves from this irreversible genetic contamination and the associated pesticides.
And the word that comes to mind is corruption. They're in cahoots.
That's what we're dealing with, you know, right in our faces here on Kauai. Our mayor right now, you know, I was at his, you know, when he announced that he was gonna run, you know, I was in Lihue, just I don't know why, but God put me in Lihue that day, and I was there, and right in the spot, right at the DMV, just walking out, and, oh, what's that over there? And you know, his number one supporters were the same people that are suing him, suing our county. So all the bosses of Dow, you know, Syngenta, DuPont, Pioneer, BASF, they're all over there just, go Carvalho, you know, we're suing you. But hey, you know, it's like, it takes the people to stand up, you know what I mean? And it's like, luckily we live in such a tight-knit place where everybody, you can't really get away with bullshit. You know?
There you go. We have to watch the FCC rules there, but I think BS will follow.
It was another technical term.
Yeah, there we go.
I thought they said on TV, so it's
all right. Yeah, there we go. We have to wait until after 8 o'clock. I got a phone call from Kaloa. Kalika, are you still there? Hello, Kalika, you there? Uh-oh. Can you hear us? He can't hear us because might not have the kind on. How about you? How about now? Oh. Pick him up. See if he's there. Kalika. We might have missed him.
Aloha, Kalika. Okay, hold on one second. I'm bringing you right up.
There you go. Pop him up.
Okay,
there we go. How about now?
Fantastic. Let me turn the phone, radio off.
Thank you, Kalika.
Okay, well, gentlemen, Tyrone, Jimmy, Schutz, Jeffrey, and Dustin, and other wonderful folk, my concern is, besides the GMOs, a related issue in my mind is the Codex Alimentarius, which started under the Nazis, and now the UN has taken it up, and basically defines a nutrient as a toxin.
A nutrient as a toxin.
You've heard of Codex Alimentarius?
I've heard that.
Well, just for example, gentlemen, if you were in Europe, like Germany, for example, and you wanted to get a script of vitamin D, you would have to first go to a doctor, and it would cost you $200 as opposed to, if you need it, thank God we don't need it here on Kauai, but it would cost you maybe $5 in the United States or Canada. So in this Alice in Wonderland world in which we live, nutrients defined as a toxin along with the munitions companies becoming morphing into pharmaceutical agri nightmares, it seems like a perfect context in which to decimate the human civilization, population.
Well, I can speak to Codex. Codex Alimentarius is a standards-creating committee. Those standards are used by the World Trade Organization to arbitrate disputes. And this is, it's important for people to understand there's a hierarchy of laws where we talked about it a moment ago. No one's awake and home at the national level, and so you try to take it at the state level, and if they don't take it at the state level, they take it at the county level. But if you do something at the county level, the state can come in and preempt it and say, no, not your responsibility, we'll take it. And then the government, the federal government, can do that to the state. So, for example, Vermont just passed a labeling bill requiring anything that contains genetically engineered foods to be labeled starting in 2 years. That can be completely preempted by the FDA. But there's another body that can preempt that, and that's international treaties. Now, there's been a kind of a corporatocracy or a corporate influence takeover of a lot of these government levels, and when they can't win it at a national level, they create laws, literally create laws and rules at an international level that require nations or...
Like Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yeah, Trans-Pacific Partnership. Like the second Bush, George Bush, he sued Europe for delaying the approvals of GMOs, saying that the non-approval of GMOs was a trade barrier. And although they lost in 12 out of 13 of the contended issues, the courts did say, yes, Europe, you have to speed up the process of approving GMOs. And so you can impose laws on a country, and unfortunately these trade delegations are made up of the same companies that are suing Kauai. They are actually the U.S. trade delegation is Monsanto's people and Dow, etc., because
right.
It's really designed for the promotion of U.S.-based transnationals, not basically the citizens.
Is this Dr. Tyrone?
No, that's Jeffrey Smith.
Hi, Jeffrey. I have a question for Dr. Tyrone. I was listening to your interview with Dr. Donna Kaplan.
Yes.
And you made a comment regarding the downstream effect especially in the water sources of from astrazine and perhaps Roundup. And I was wondering, as a chelator of nutrients, do you think that even though there's a less of effect in the food chain, do you think that is there an aspect of the fact that our nutrients are being deleted by these heinous substances?
I don't know so much about that issue. I do know that as herbicides, of course, that both Roundup, glyphosate, and atrazine actually destroy plant matter that lives in the water as well. And that has a big impact on fish that rely on that plant life in the water, has a big impact on amphibians, on tadpoles that rely on the water. In terms of the impact on food sources and nutrients for humans, I'm not that familiar with that area.
Right. Well, I'll hang up now, and thank you so much. I've listened to your contributions.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for that call. I wanted to just ask, in regards to last night's presentation, Dr. Hayes, you mentioned atrazine being used as a what the purpose of it for the growing of corn. First, I thought it was for killing weeds, but it sounded like it does something to the corn itself.
No, it's primarily a weed killer, so it's an herbicide. It's mostly used on corn. Sugar cane is very important. It's also used in the forestry industry.
Mm-hmm.
After trees are cut, atrazine is applied to prevent shrubs and bushes from growing up to compete with the trees. But its main use is as a weed killer.
As an herbicide.
As an herbicide.
And so how does it do, how does it kill?
The way that it kills plants, well, mm-hmm. it kills weeds, it interferes with a protein that's involved in energy transfer during photosynthesis. So essentially the plants starve to death because they aren't able to carry out photosynthesis and make energy for themselves.
Okay. So it prevents, it's a disruptor in mm-hmm. regards to its ability to photosynthesize, and then
correct.
The plant starts to wither and fail.
Correct.
Uh-huh. And how is it used where it doesn't harm the non-target species, the plant that they're trying to, the product that they're trying to protect?
Well, interestingly enough, so-called monocot plants like grasses and corns, you know, where the veins are parallel,
mm-hmm.
those plants have a natural resistance to atrazine. So they have a compound that essentially binds the atrazine and keeps it out of the plant. So the atrazine goes in, but they're able to basically detoxify themselves, whereas other target plants like weeds that are targeted by atrazine
broadleaf.
Are unable to do that
mm-hmm.
broadleaf.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Huh. Okay. And the work that you, for people who weren't there last night, the work that you've been doing has been looking at frogs. Share with our listening audience what your research has been based on, how you started, and where you're at with it now.
Well, so essentially atrazine was thought to be safe for the environment because we don't do photosynthesis, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was that atrazine would kill weeds but wouldn't affect the animals. But what we've discovered, and I was actually hired by the manufacturer, so my work was funded by the manufacturer initially, is that atrazine has a completely independent effect on animals. It's an endocrine disruptor, so it interferes with hormones. And in particular, atrazine lowers the male hormone testosterone and increases the production of the female hormone estrogen in everything that's been examined. I work on frogs, but similar data have been shown in fish, in amphibians, in reptiles, in birds, and laboratory rodents. The consequences in frogs, in my studies, are that males have poor reproductive properties, so they don't show reproductive behavior, they have low sperm count, they don't develop properly as males. And also genetic males can be completely feminized, where they turn into females and function as females. Similar effects have been shown in fish, in reptiles, in birds, in mammals, and in fact, in laboratory rodents and in humans, this same mechanism is probably responsible for low sperm count in men, for increased prostate cancer in men, for increased breast cancer in women, and for a number of birth defects, including abnormal genital development in male fetuses that are exposed when they're still in the womb.
Oh, heavy. I had somebody sent an email to me. I'm going to try to pull it up. It was a question regarding the article that was in the paper yesterday. Were you able to read a little bit about that Let me pull.
It depends. I've seen a couple of local articles.
Okay. We got another phone call coming our way. Back to your kind of intersection, Jeffrey, your work has been primarily, I guess, trying to highlight the harms that GMO technology has in the modern world, in our agricultural systems and food production. Last night, Dr. Hayes had suggested that, you know, his issue with GMOs wasn't so much, you know, that's not the big issue for him. It's just knowing that this product is so harmful. We're at a place now where we're understanding, you know, the amount of pesticides being used and the kind of hand-in-glove effect that this type of technology requires. What do you see in regards to our ability as society to make the connection that this isn't something that's going to be beneficial for us in the long run, that this isn't something, as Dr. Hayes said last night, you know, it's a crock when they say they're feeding the world. But that's what proponents are suggesting, that this is technology that's going to save us.
I think there's a very fast-growing movement in the United States that's aware that that's not true. In 2007, 15% of Americans said that they reduced or avoided eating GMOs. In 2010, it was up to 25%. In 2013, 39%. Non-GMO products, the labels are fastest growing addition label to in the United States, and that category of foods is growing faster in sales, either first or second faster than any other health or wellness claim in the last 2 years. So we see actually an incredible awareness and demand for non-GMO food. In fact, that's driven the labeling campaign, with more than half the states introducing legislation in the last year and more than half expected this year. Now, we also see that doctors are prescribing non-GMO diets in record numbers, thousands upon thousands, and I speak a lot at medical conferences and medical colleges, and I do informal polls of the audience, and indeed there are thousands, and there are, as millions of are avoiding them, we now are getting testimonials and case studies from the people and their physicians and dietitians and nutritionists of getting better from a variety of diseases and disorders, gastrointestinal, immune system issues like asthma and allergies, skin problems, weight problems, headaches, migraine headaches included, all sorts of issues, including autistic symptoms, ADHD, grade point average changes, behavioral issues. And these are also very similar to what we see in the lab animals that are fed GMOs. In fact, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine in 2009 reviewed the lab animal research and said gastrointestinal problems, immune system problems, reproductive problems, organ damage, etc. And when livestock are taken off of GMOs, they also show the same benefits
recovery
as do the pets.
Mm-hmm.
And now if you look at the rise of GMOs and the use of Roundup, which is used with most GMOs, the Roundup herbicide, if you look at that graph, you can plot against it the increase in diabetes, obesity, high blood pressure, gastrointestinal disorders, autism, deaths from senile dementia and Parkinson's, celiac disease, certain types of cancers, and they match hand in glove. Now, that alone does not prove it, but it is supporting the evidence that we've already discussed. And if you look at the two main toxins that are found in GMOs, the Roundup, as well as the BT toxin insecticide that's produced by corn plants itself, and you look at just those characteristics, that can explain this wide variety of diseases and disorders. And people are catching on.
People are catching on. We have a phone call there. Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Jimmy. This is Maggie Sergio from Fairfax, California.
Well, Maggie, thank you so much for joining us here on Out of the Box.
How you doing?
We're doing well.
Good. Hey, Dylan. Dustin and Tyrone and Jeffrey, hello.
Hello.
The question I have, primarily, I think it's more for Dustin. One of the things that I've been thinking about is the upcoming election. And I was wondering, Dustin, has there been any discussion or any conversations around having this having this election monitored by an independent third party, because I think you'll agree that, you know, the NDC does not want to see you elected mayor. They don't want to see Felicia elected to county council, nor do they want to see, you know, Dylan go to the state house.
Of course they don't. And I was just thinking, you know, how we can manage the votes in a fair way, you know. So I mean, any help we could get is appreciated in that situation. But
yeah, there are independent third party organizations that do election monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
We all know what happened in this country, you know, with Florida and Angola.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't put anything past this industry, and I don't think you guys would either.
I wouldn't too. You know, the trust is gone here on this island with those corporations, and we know how, you know, locked in our officials are with these companies, and it's, you know, that's why all of us are standing up and, you know, stepping to the plate and, you know, looking to create a cleaner future for our island, you know, and that has to do with, you know, getting all the people involved and making decisions as an island, not just as five people on a board, yeah, or one dictating.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're definitely gonna need something like that.
So I will throw my hat in the ring, and I will help to investigate, you know, nonprofit organizations and third parties that do election monitoring, and I'll send an email for some info, because I do think, you know, to make sure that this election is, you know, honest and fair.
Yeah, definitely.
If you've got some oversight happening.
Yeah, yeah. It's we'd really appreciate it. We'd really appreciate your help, and we appreciate everything you've been doing with us along the way. So mahalo.
From my heart, you guys are very welcome.
Thank you, Maggie, for that call and question. Maggie Sergio, she's a Bay Area-based journalist, environmentalist, has posted on Huffington Post about our issues here on Kauai. So thank you for joining us on Out of the Box. Do we have another phone call? There we go. Bring that up. Call, are you there? No, we lost that. How about now? No, we're still there. I do have that. This is for Dr. Hayes. This was sent to me, a farmer in the Molawa area. She says, I'll be listening but not able to call in. I'm wondering if you can have Dr. Hayes comment on some of the information in the TGI Wednesday edition, the front page, regarding the State Department of Health pesticide project. In particular, here's a quote, atrazine and metolachlor. Mm-hmm. Two restricted use herbicides were detected at agricultural sites downstream of seed crop operations. One location had levels that exceeded aquatic life guidelines for both compounds, but remained below regulatory standards. What does that mean? And exceeds the guidelines, but below the regulatory standards. So that's one. And then further in the article, it says that samples at Kikioola, one of our harbors on the west side, measured levels of atrazine at 2.05 UGL and 1.07 UGL. I'm not sure what that is, something per liters, I imagine. Both above the EPA aquatic life benchmark of 1 GGL. Since atrazine doesn't go away, does this mean we can expect levels to rise due to cumulative effects? And so, are you familiar with the article she's referring to? It was in yesterday's Garden Island paper.
I'm not sure if I'm familiar with the article, but I'm familiar with the statements. And the excuse me. The bottom line is the UGL is, it doesn't mean, it means micrograms per liter, but those safety levels, those benchmark levels, are actually irrelevant. They're actually not based on anything that's safe in real life. So, for example, the EPA's drinking water standard for atrazine is 3 parts per billion, which is the same as 3 micrograms per liter, or 3 UGL. But that level was never shown to be safe by the EPA or anybody.
Okay, so that was last night. I think somebody had made a reference as well. And,
correct.
And you said that number, you know, is just something they kind of pulled out of the hat. It's a nice round number, 3. So let's go with it.
I mean, it's not quite arbitrary, but a cancer was produced in rats at 3,000 UGL, or micrograms per liter, and so they divide it by 10 because it's a different species. Okay. They divide by 10 because of the strain. They divide by 10 because of safety, and they say, okay, 3 parts per billion, 3 UGL.
It should be safe.
And it's not. I mean, we get effects of atrazine at levels that are 300 times lower mm-hmm. than that level. Mm-hmm. So what they're able to do, though, is hide behind that number and say, okay, atrazine is detectable, but it's below the EPA standard. But the EPA standard doesn't really reflect what's safe
mm-hmm.
at all.
The report also said that the field that was upstream from the finding had sprayed a few weeks earlier. So it indicates probably that the level was much higher after spray.
Probably.
And that also, would the exposure be higher airborne? Which would be higher, the exposure, or which would be worse, the airborne exposure or the drinking water exposure?
It depends on the animal and depends on the chemical. Mm-hmm. I mean, atrazine
itself. How about humans?
it depends. So, for example, for most people, your atrazine exposure is going to be through drinking water. However, if you're a factory worker or a farm worker, most of your exposure is going to be from absorption and inhalation, from breathing it in. And those levels actually will end up much higher than you would find in the average citizen even living in an area.
So I saw a map of a drift area around Pioneer seed plants and the Syngenta, the other plants. And so people would be getting, anytime there's a spray and the wind is blowing in that direction, they're getting atrazine. Can you sense, based on how much is in the water 3 weeks afterwards, whether those people are really at risk from atrazine poisoning at the time of spraying?
No, I don't know how you translate that, but both things are important. If it's in the water and you're drinking it in, if it's in the dust that you're breathing it in both cases, the atrazine is entering your body and you're getting exposed. Mm-hmm. What's most important is probably how frequently you're exposed. So, for example, atrazine is not acutely toxic, meaning that, you know, you could drink a significant amount of atrazine and walk out of here tomorrow, urinate it out, and it's gone. But you're exposed to very low levels repeatedly throughout development, throughout your life, especially during pregnancy, especially during early development. That's what I would be more concerned about. So, for example, if I gave a frog a big dose of atrazine one day and then removed it, that frog would recover, wouldn't be hurt. But a frog exposed, as well as a human, exposed to low levels of atrazine repeatedly, that's what really creates the problem.
So this drinking water, this water issue then, being lower, you have two things then. You have lower than the, quote, EPA standard, which is meaningless, but then you also have the fact that it's now part of the island's drinking water, so that people are getting it over and over and over again, and there's some bioaccumulation of the poison or the effect.
There's not bioaccumulation, but repeated exposure is repeated exposure. Because atrazine is water-soluble, it doesn't stick in the body, so to speak. But if you're constantly drinking in, or if you are a fetus that's exposed to atrazine, stuck in a contaminated amniotic fluid, then that's very different than an adult that gets exposed, for example, through one drinking glass of water. For factory workers, for farm workers, for people who are living in areas where their drinking water is contaminated and they're constantly exposed, that's what becomes problematic.
So if I lived in Kauai and I knew there was something in the drinking water, is there a water purifier or purification method that would clean my drinking water and also household in terms of exposure to the shower or the bath?
Well, of course, there are activated carbon filters that will remove atrazine. But as I always tell people, that doesn't solve the environmental problem. Wildlife and is still exposed. That doesn't solve the problem for factory workers and farm workers who are exposed, because most of their exposure is through inhalation and absorption across the skin. So when you get that kind of exposure, even once you have the awareness and even if you have the resources to filter out the atrazine, that doesn't help you as a factory or a farm worker. And the other thing I usually point out is, I think we should all bring in filters and protect ourselves personally, but also recognize that then we're taking the burden of taking something out of our water that shouldn't be there in the first place. It really should be the manufacturer's job to make sure that we aren't exposed in the first place.
I got a question.
Far away.
Have you ever tested, like, you know how we have these chemical cocktails going on here? Have you tested atrazine and other chemicals like paraquat or whatever else they're using up there together? Have you ever tested any of that and the mm-hmm. effects?
I haven't tested paraquat per se, but I've tested pesticide mixtures, and the effects of the pesticide mixtures are much bigger than any individual pesticide alone. That's true in frogs, and that's, I'm sure, true in humans as well.
I had one more question. Before I forget it.
Go ahead.
How, you know, you do a lot of your work with frogs, right? So mm-hmm. how similar is a frog's body and system to a human's.
Practically identical. So the reproductive hormones in frogs, testosterone, estrogen, the developmental hormones, thyroid hormone, are exactly the same. They're made exactly the same way in frogs as they are in humans, as they are in fish, as they are in reptiles. So when you see a chemical that interferes with hormone production or hormone synthesis or hormone function in an amphibian or a fish, you can best believe that you're going to see similar effects in humans.
I think that's like an important fact that people should know, you know, about the effects of atrazine.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Because he comes here and he talks about the frogs, and maybe people get distracted to the fact that us and humans and frogs are almost identical. So his work on frogs is basically work with humans.
Well, and I recall a number of scoffing remarks in regards to testimony being presented from the blue shirt side, saying, "Hey, I work out there, I live out there, and I'm a man. I've always been a man. You know, and there's no problems with me. I use this stuff." I was going to ask you, Dr. Hayes, do some individuals have more sensitivity or more susceptible to the harms than others?
Well, yeah, of course that's true. So, for example, you know that any toxin or any chemical, or any germ, if you spray it in a room, some people get sick and some people don't. Some people are more resistant, some people are more susceptible, depending on the age that you are, you know, what period you are in your life, or any number of things. And in particular, if you look at things like cancer, for example, minorities are often, you know, for blacks and Hispanics, we are 11, are more susceptible to 11 out of 13 cancers. We're more likely to die from 13 out of 13 cancers. And one of the things that we're really interested in now in my laboratory is that a matter of biology, or does that reflect the fact that minorities are more likely to live in and more likely to work in areas where we're exposed to chemicals, where we're exposed to environmental stressors that contribute to those health disparities, that contribute to a greater susceptibility to those same diseases.
Mm-hmm. Last night you talked about the influence of stress in if you will, the victim, that, you know, certain things are going to stress you more, whether it's the quality of water or it's the, you know, chemicals you use at your workplace. And like you said, that the last night, that the issue of environmental justice comes into play when you think about, you know, where this is being used or who is applying, what their backgrounds are. I want to just take a couple of minutes to say that you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is 91.9 FM here on the beautiful North Shore of Kauai, 104.7 on the island of Oahu, 95.1 FM on the cable dial, 92.7 on Ahola Moloa'a, and everywhere else. You'll catch us at www.kkcr.org on the World Wide Web. That's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, and K284AL in Hala'iwa. So phone lines are 826-7771. We have Dr. Tyrone Hayes, who will be leaving Kauai this evening. Thank you for joining us here on Out of the Box. And Jeffrey Smith from the Institute of Responsible Technology, who is a guest of community activists, engaged citizens who are organizing around the issue of GMO and the chemical ag corporations that are operating on this island. There is a meeting tonight, a public event at Common Ground at 6:30 in Kilauea. Jeffrey, you are going to be speaking later on in this weekend as well?
Yes, on Saturday, I'm going to be at the Waimea Canyon Middle School, 6:30 to 8:30 on Saturday.
On Saturday. Saturday's a big day on the west side. It's a March Against Monsanto worldwide event, a day of action. Obviously, on Kauai, we don't have Monsanto headquartered or based here anymore. So some of us are very thankful for that, but also just in solidarity with activists and community members that are concerned about the effects that Monsanto brings to community. It's an issue here in the States, certainly an issue here on our beautiful Garden Island. So Saturday there's a full-on day of different activities, from sign holding, and we'll get some information out there. Also, Felicia Cowden, who is running for council, is hosting a concert in conjunction with her campaign, as well as the March Against Monsanto there on the west side. John Cruz will be the featured performer. There'll be lots of speakers as well. I need to play a couple of underwriters for us at the top of the hour, and we'll take care of that, and we'll be back here just in a couple seconds so that you can continue to enjoy the conversation that we're having with Dr. Tyrone Hayes and Jeffrey Smith and Dustin Barca, candidate for mayor.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply in Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama aina.
Ma'alie Foundation and County of Kauai present King Kamehameha Celebration and Parade 2014. On Saturday, June 14th at 9 a.m., the fabulous floral parade starts from Vidina Stadium, ending at the historic county building. Full pa'u units, floats, and walking and riding units. Performances by Nā Makuakane, Tamatea Nui o Kauai, Kahanulani Ali'i, Ekolu Ena Opio, Nā Molokama, the Triple T's, and introducing Kauai Nui Kuapapa. Crafts, food, and nonprofit booths, too. That's the King Kamehameha Celebration and Parade, downtown Lihue, Saturday, June 14th from 9 to 3. Everyone welcome. E komo mai.
So mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, and I want to thank all you listeners and all you members and supporters for participating in our community radio in our recently conducted spring membership drive. We had a goal of $60,000, and fortunately, you know, it took us a couple extra shifts, but we did get our $60,000 goal met. So mahalo to all of you for joining us and keeping this community radio station happening. This is Jimmy Trujillo with Tim Kalai, man in the phones. We've got a phone call lined up, so we'll take that right now. Nope, that's not the phone call we wanted. Go one more time. Oh, nope, we lost him. One more time. Oh, two for two, baby. I don't know what happened. But we'll get you back. 826-7771. Here we go. One more time. Here we go. How about now? Still there?
This is Bob Yonke.
Bob Yonke, how are you, sir?
Good.
Right on. You are on Out of the Box with Jimmy Trujillo and Tyrone Hayes and Jeffrey Smith. You got a question for our guests?
Yes. Dr. Hayes, I'm the author of the Charter Amendment for Kauai Rising. And one of the things that we're trying to address here is the fact that EPA does not update these exposure limits very often. Can you give us some sense of how old this 3 parts per billion standard is, and how much of the research that you've developed in the last few years has occurred since EPA has updated the standard, and when would you expect EPA to take into account this new evidence before they would do anything with the federal standard?
Wow. I wish I could answer those questions. I don't know how old the standard is. I know it's been the standard for at least 20 years. I would guess it's always been the standard. And the EPA is very much aware of my data and aware of other people's data, but there have been no adjustments of the drinking water standard or what's considered the safe standard, to my knowledge, over that period of time. If anything, other countries have actually increased their drinking water and their safe standard, only because they're now realizing that atrazine can't be used in a way that it can be guaranteed to be below that standard. So, you know, as far as I know, there's been no readjustment to the standard, and I don't know how that would actually happen or how they would actually reset those standards, either based on my data or the hundreds of or dozens of new studies that have come out since that standard was set.
Well, that's very helpful, because most people have no idea how the federal regulatory programs work, and they don't realize that these standards have been on the books forever.
That's correct.
And they're based on ancient evidence that It has nothing to do with what we now know about how dangerous these chemicals are.
That's correct. The standards that are set for any chemical now are not based on, for example, a chemical's ability to interfere with hormones and act as an endocrine disruptor, because that science was not even being addressed and not even really well understood at the time that those standards were set. So there have been no resetting of standards since the new technology. Those standards are based on cancer and general toxicology, not on the information and the data that we have available to us now.
Well, I think I just dropped Bob Yonke off the line there, so I apologize for that. It happens too frequently with the fat fingers hit the wrong one. And I think that that's a critical question in regards to, you know, these standards and whether they're arbitrary or not. When do they get reviewed? When do they get, if you will, adjusted in favor of public health?
I wish I knew the answer to that. Mm-hmm. After it's being reviewed, mm-hmm. the reports haven't been issued, but there's been at least four reviews of atrazine in the last 15 years that I've been working on atrazine, but it's resulted in no changes in how atrazine is regulated or what's considered safe or whether or not it can even be used.
Mm-hmm. The lack of response by the regulatory agencies is also consistent with GMOs. I testified at the EPA, pointed out that their own science advisory panel
yes.
said that the internal insecticide that's produced by the corn shows in peer-reviewed published studies to actually cause problems in humans and in animals and should be tested. Maybe it'll cause allergies, they said. We need to check. This was entirely ignored by the Environmental Protection Agency, which re-registered the BT corn. That's the corn that produces this BT toxin. Now, there's some new evidence that's also being ignored. The BT toxin kills insects by poking holes in their stomachs and destroying the integrity of the stomachs and killing the insect. It was supposed to only affect insects, but a 2012 study showed that it actually pokes holes in human cells. And it was also found in the blood of 93% of pregnant women tested in Canada and 80% of their unborn fetuses. So now we have a hole-poking toxin in the blood of fetuses where they don't have a blood-brain barrier, so you have a hole-poking toxin that may get in the brain of the offspring of this generation. And all of that is being ignored by the regulatory agencies who are mandated to promote biotechnology.
Just like our government, people are being put in places in our hospital systems too, like Scott McFarlane, who's a lawyer for the chemical corporations on the island, is now the head of the hospitals here on the island.
For the state-run programs.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. it's like, I just learned that yesterday, and I was just baffled and disgusted and pissed off. And so he's the head of Waimea. He's been the main lawyer for these companies for years. And now he's the head of the Waimea hospital, and where all these birth defects are happening and effects from the companies. And it's like, wow, how stupid do you think we are here on Kauai? You know, it's like so in our face. It's just so disrespectful, you know what I mean? And it's happening all over the country. The same thing is happening all over the country. We're having way more allergies, way more autism, way more birth defects, way more anything than ever.
But, and we wonder why.
Yeah, it's like, this ain't normal, because when I grew up, we never had that kind of stuff.
Mm. That's it. So we got another phone call. We're going to try to bring on up. Aloha, caller, you there?
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. You might have to turn your radio down or take us off speakerphone.
Give me 1 second.
All righty. So, yeah, Dustin, you make a great point that there is, and back to that idea, you know, that the system has been corrupted. The values have been tweaked, or that the mission of our regulatory agents are being no longer...
It's so far away from the people, you know what I mean? It's for the corporations, by the corporations, and we've got to go back to, you know, for the people, by the people.
There we go. Caller, you there?
Yes, thank you very much.
Sure, thank you for calling.
I'm blasting the show at my house, and everyone can hear it. Hey, so a couple of things. First off, I just want to say thanks, Jimmy, Dustin, Dr. Hayes, Mr. Smith. Thank you all guys for being on the air. I really appreciate it. First thing, shout out to that lady from Fairfax. 94930. It's actually like my stomping ground, so right on. I think I'm a friend on Facebook somehow.
Oh, there you go.
But anyway, I have a question for Dr. Hayes. I came and watched you speak in Waimea, I guess maybe 2 years ago, when Lauren Tang spoke before you, and he had a great presentation on the combination of chemical stacking, as they call it, and was also talking about, well, I think you were talking about it, and he as well, about how the atrazine volatilizes, and the distances it can travel, and so we hear a lot over here that, like, oh, it's just a west side problem, you know, I mean, all that stuff's just on the west side, but, like, thinking about it, like, if the things are going to volatilize and rise in the air, could it, like, theoretically be caught in the clouds and come island-wide, and maybe even, I think he said something like 1,000 of miles that things can travel, so couldn't it theoretically be, like, hitting everywhere? And so that's my question. And then one last thing, I'll take the answer off air. Just want to say, like, these guys that we're up against, they must be getting, like, kind of like yeah, realizing that there's a wave coming, you know what I mean? Kind of like a momentum building against them. And so I think it's really important that everyone realizes that, like, they're going to come out strong and they're going to do pretty much whatever it's going to take to, like, discredit, you know what I mean, whatever you want to call it, this movement, or, like, the, you know, people actually standing up for themselves is basically what it boils down to. But so, like, you know, everyone's got to be ready. And like Dustin said, like, I think what it's going to take is a lot of people coming together and working together, you know what I mean, for this common goal.
Yes.
That's all I want to say.
Yes. So as a matter of clarification, atrazine itself doesn't volatilize, but it does go up on dust, and it does get into the clouds. The U.S. Geological Survey can measure it in the clouds. It can travel quite distances, so it can travel over 1,000 miles. They can measure it in the rainwater in Minnesota from applications in Kansas. They could measure it in coming over in rainwater from Germany after France banned it. So it's very clear that it can travel at least 1,000 miles in the atmosphere in the clouds. And so atrazine that's being used in one place can certainly be transferred to another place because of weather patterns. This might be true for other chemicals, which haven't been studied yet, but it's certainly true for atrazine up to 10 parts per billion or 100 times higher than we know to be biologically active can come down in the rainwater. And in the U.S., something like 500,000 pounds of atrazine come down in rainwater every year. So you're very correct. It can transfer. With regards to the, or can be transported. With regards to the movement is strong here in Hawaii. But I want to point out I've also been involved in movements in Minnesota to ban atrazine, and movements in Illinois, movements in New York, movements in Tasmania. I think what we have to keep doing is hitting them from all angles, legislation, litigation, regulation, and we have to keep dividing their forces. So when they come here to fight in Hawaii, you've got to get partners and sisters and brother partners in other states and other parts of the world, divide their forces so that we can actually do something for the people that's not actually continuing to use these pesticides and continue to contaminate people so that a very few people can make a lot of profit.
Well, that's, you know, that's a, yeah, sorry.
Go ahead.
Go.
I wanted to just, because you guys have been traveling, the three of you have been traveling the islands.
Yeah.
You guys have seen the if you will, mobilization of the people. Jeffrey, if you could just talk a little bit about that. So, since the last time you were here visiting, how much more of a organized effort do you see statewide? And you're also aware of the trends nationally and internationally. What do you see in regards to the future for the movement?
Well, just 2 days ago, there was a successful votes in Jackson County, Oregon, and Josephine County, Oregon, banning the planting of GMOs. And the year before, there was the banning of planting in the San Juan Island county in Washington State. I mentioned earlier, Vermont passed a labeling bill, was signed by the governor last month. Connecticut and Maine passed a conditional labeling bill last year. We are seeing an amazing amount of uprising at local jurisdiction levels. And we saw the Big Island, pass a ban, not complete ban. They allowed to grandfather in papaya and possibly corn in the Big Island, so there's no planting of GMOs allowed there. And then Kauai, of course, stood up and said, you can't be spraying stuff around here without telling us what you're spraying or planting stuff, which is completely logical. And that was an absolute breakthrough. It was an absolute breakthrough. So I see what's happening here is there is a revolution going on, people becoming empowered as they become aware, and they're also seeing other jurisdictions successful. Now, the other side has their own way of trying to block it. So when the first county passed a ban on GMOs in the United States, it was Mendocino County.
And it was Northern California.
Yeah, Northern California. It was called Measure H, and the biotech industry called it the H-bomb. And what they did is they rushed to legislation in 14 states, preemption, I think it's 15 now, preemption, making it illegal for counties to ban GMOs.
And they tried that here as well.
Yeah. So that's, you know, I'm very much for local control in this issue because the state's not handling it, and that's why I'm here to support the vote in November. But it's possible that the state will just come in and cream us afterwards, or the federal government. But that doesn't matter. It means that the whole process of putting it in print, of getting it passed, is absolutely essential now, and it's happening all over, not only this country. France banned GMOs, Italy, Germany, the courts in Mexico. There was a request by the courts in Brazil to ban Roundup. They tried to ban Roundup in Sri Lanka, but they got pushed back. So it's actually happening all over the world.
We had a bill this year in the State House on Oahu to look at banning Roundup. Obviously, wasn't successful. Didn't move beyond the initial committee that it was heard, or if it did, it didn't travel too far out of there.
And I got to tell people, don't believe, you know, the idea that you can just spray Roundup in bare feet and no protection.
That's only Roundup. Is what you commonly hear.
Yeah, Roundup actually was described to me by two scientists who wrote papers on it as the most chronically toxic chemical on Earth. One of their papers combined linked Roundup's active ingredient, which, by the way, the active ingredient was like a thousandth the toxicity of the Roundup combination as a whole. But just the actual active ingredient, glyphosate, was linked to birth defects. It was linked to cancer, heart disease, obesity, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, autism, gastrointestinal disorders, reproductive disorders, gluten sensitivity, aggression, depression, and kidney failure.
Oh, the list goes on.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, we talked, you know, Tyrone talked about estrogen and all that. The rats that were fed levels of Roundup in the drinking water, which is well below that level considered
standard
safe in the United
mm-hmm.
States, they not only had multiple massive tumors, early death, but they also, the males had more estrogen and the females had more testosterone, which is the opposite. So feminizing the masculine and who knows, you know.
Demasculizing the feminine.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Now, Roundup, glyphosate being number one, you know, all over the world. Everybody loves it. And then followed up closely is atrazine. And Dr. Hayes, you shared last night that at one point was the most popular, but now it no longer is. But the effects are far-reaching. Share with listeners that haven't seen your work before just how widespread is this harm in the United States and in throughout the world.
Well, in terms of levels, atrazine is the most commonly detected chemical contaminant of drinking water, surface water, rainwater, groundwater, you name it. Atrazine, about 15 years ago, was the number one selling pesticide in the country. We used about 80 million pounds a year. It's now number two, but not because we use less atrazine. We still use about 80 million pounds a year, but because we use more
Roundup,
more mm-hmm. glyphosate. And that's because atrazine and Roundup kind of competed for use on corn, but the use of Roundup on corn was because of a GM product, so-called Roundup-ready corn. The problem is you can't really plant the same crop year after year after year. You have to rotate your crops. So you could use atrazine or Roundup on corn, but then the next year, for example, you might have to use soy. So what's happened with Roundup, with Monsanto, is they developed a Roundup-ready soy, so now you can use Roundup every year on both of your crops, the crop that you rotate. So we don't use less atrazine now, it's just we use
more
Roundup now. That's
there
really
go.
Good problem.
Do we have a caller?
Yes.
Okay, caller, thanks for being patient and holding.
Aloha from the Big Island. I just wanted to emphasize on the election that your listeners really need to help groups and candidates that are trying to help your Ohana. For instance, the Center for Food Safety, they're making calls this summer and they need volunteers to help call, and candidates need help. These groups like Earth Justice and Jeffrey's group, these groups need your help to get good candidates in there. And it's important that if you're concerned about this, you must volunteer to help.
Well, certainly appreciate...
And register by August 9th.
There you go. Register by August 9th. All right, we dropped another phone call. Dustin Barka, candidate for mayor for the island of Kauai. You know, speak to this movement and the support that you're getting from strangers, from folks that you've never met. Now you're in the limelight for a variety of reasons. You know, obviously before deciding to be a candidate, you were out in front leading marches, being one of the most visible warriors in this fight. What's it like now to be a candidate, and what do you see as being the ticket to success to help, you know, kind of right the wrong that we see in our local government?
Well, you know, the first part of your question, you know, just the support's been, you know, super humbling to say the least. And, you know, I think, you know, when I go talk to people, I just, you know, I'm just a normal person. I'm not a politician. I'm not trying to sell myself on people and sell a dream that's impossible. You know what I mean? I mean, our goals for the island are very possible, and they're not far away. You know what I mean? It just takes people coming together, the county, you know, facilitating people to, you know, to pull these dreams off that we have for our island, you know. Mm-hmm. And it takes, you know, the island being involved, the people who vote starting to get more involved in what's going on our island. And you know, with some of our goals, like, you know, the cultural restoration and stuff like that, where we're, you know, working on the heiaus. Like, I've been working on a Pohoku heiau right here in Princeville, and it's just a spiritually rewarding experience, you know what I mean? And you feel the energy of these places, and you see why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just by the community coming together and feeling that and helping, you know, helping clean out the fish ponds, helping, you know, restore those and moving rocks and coming together as Ohana and family. And that's what this island's all about, you know what I mean? And that's how we make stuff happen. The reason we're so far away is because we're so dependent and trustful in these people who we elect that are supposed to make all the right decisions for us. But, you know, we've gotten to the point where that's just not the way it is anymore. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like I said, it's gone to corporatization, where it's, you know, for the corporations, by the corporations, putting their people into positions and, you know, infiltrating basically our rights. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So. Mm-hmm. We're just at a tipping point. Like, I've been saying it for a long time when I come on the radio and I talk to people. We're at a pinnacle in life. This issues we have on Kauai isn't just on Kauai. These are issues going on everywhere in the world. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to travel the world as a professional surfer and, you know, and end up in a lot of different places that I didn't even want to be, that were just, you know, some of the worst places on earth and some of the best. And I'm lucky to know how special what we have is, and know how messed up everything else is, and how important it is to think global but act local. You know?
There we go. I appreciate that, Dustin, in regards to, you know, your position as a leader in the movement, traveling from island to island, community to community, and then to make that decision to expose yourself even more as a candidate, and to challenge someone as popular as Mayor Bernard Carvalho to not just try to get in, but to defeat one of the most popular politicians that we've seen in a long time, and it's a formidable challenge. I know that you're up for that task, but it's a formidable challenge, and you've taken it not lightly. You've taken it very seriously, and it's been a long time processing this, that you know, we, if we want to see change happen, have to have folks in the front to kind of keep pushing it that way.
Yeah, well, you know, I never got into any of this thinking I was going to be running for mayor of Kauai or doing anything. I never even got into it thinking I'd put on a march or anything, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I just, you know, I studied information about the issues going on our island, and I stacked it. And like you said, once you know that information, there's no going backwards, you know. And, you know, my conscience, and to me, that's God, you know what I mean? That's God telling you to do the right thing, always your conscience, you mm-hmm. know, your conscience. And for me, I've never been a religious person, but, you know, I have a strong relationship with God, and I just believe that I've been put on this path. I don't know why, but it's like, you know, it's crazy because I never would have ever thought I'd be here. But, you know, it's just my conscience and my, you know, just knowing right from wrong and not going to let the kind of stuff I know that's going on my island. How can I bring that information to everybody I know so they can be just as pissed off as me? You know, I'm not pissed off. We're just, you know, you know, like the whole movement we've put on and this whole marches and everything has been from the heart, you know what I mean? It's been from our soul. It hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been violent in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Everything we've always set off has been out of love.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I mean? And that's what this whole movement's about. It's not about we want to take away people's jobs and this and that. It's about making things right. For our keiki and the future of our island, our natural resources. We're nothing on this island without our natural resources. We're fishermen, we're farmers, you know what I mean? This is how we live. We're hunters, you know what I mean? It's like, you start taking away our ways of life, and you know what I mean, we don't got too long, you know, without our natural resources. And you know, with our reef diseases and our, you know, everything else that we got going on this island, it's like, to me, it's now or never. We cannot just be, oh, we'll shove this under the rug and keep poisoning. Don't worry, we got this is in our TCP and our drinking water in Lihue, but we aren't going to tell nobody. We'll just keep raising the level and brush it under the rug. You know what I mean? It's just these issues need to be taken head on, and the people need to know what's going on so we can make the conscious decisions. It can't just be five people in a room saying, oh, I think, hey, and their strings are being pulled by God knows who, you know what I mean? It's like, it's time to start bringing these issues to the communities and saying, what do you think in every community? And then you make conscious decisions for the island, you know what I mean?
I think at different times, you know, we talk about that this process, a lot of folks would perceive it as being very divisive, that we're dividing our community, that everything is coming to a loggerhead. But we've shared that, you know, this is about uniting, that this is a values clarification process that we're undertaking to say what's appropriate and what's not.
Jeffrey, you look in the dictionary under division, you're not going to see 4,000 to 6,000 people walking up a street. You know, that's not division, that's unity. They never seen nothing like that on this island ever. So, you know what I mean? Division is the furthest thing than what's happening on this island.
Mm-hmm.
This island is uniting. We uniting strong, we uniting hard, and we uniting from the heart. And, you know, in history, anybody that's been successful with, you know, creating change, the only way to beat it is with the heart. You know what I mean? Because you come from a violent point, you come from a threatening point, the military is so big and everything's so big, you're dead in a second, they'll kill everybody, they don't give up. You know what I mean? But when you start coming from the heart and you start working as communities and uniting with love, and not in a threatening way, but a demanding way, as the taxpayers and the people who actually make everything happen, that's a powerful way to make things happen, you know.
There we go. Jeffrey, you had a comment.
Well, yes, I would have to leave soon to go on to my talk tonight at the Common Ground at 6:30. So I wanted to first say I honor both of you. I'm excited and honored to be on the radio with you. I think both of you have a very similar aspect where you discovered things that were a problem and decided not to shut up.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's a, in my mind, the epidemic that has allowed GMOs, for example, to flourish and many other things, is the concept that people say, oh, it's not my responsibility. Someone else is taking care of it, and I'm sure they're doing a good job. And if we just take that attitude and reverse it and say, actually, I will hold myself responsible in some way for everything that's going on, and I'll choose my battles, but I will open my mind and my heart so that I understand that I'm creating another world, the future for the Keiki, for the Aina, for everything. And I see that that is the more fundamental tipping point. I mean, we have a tipping point coming in the GMO issue. We're engineering it. We think 3 to 5 years, 3 years food, 5 years feed. I'll describe it tonight in the talk. But what's happening more importantly, and what we do with our tipping point network and our activists, is we talk about how, as citizens, our actions are important, but in our hearts, starts there, just as you said, that in our hearts we open ourselves, taking responsibility for, feeling connected with everything. There's been a rejection of that in the past where if you feel like you're taking responsibility for it, it's a burden. But I say, no, you can actually do it with joy, going from victim to victor. So yes, you can acknowledge that there's atrazine in the water, that there's GMOs in the dust and in the food, without having to feel fear, without having to feel anger, sadness. You can feel, okay, I'm still going to choose to feel joy, and I'm going to use the reaction to that knowledge to get active.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited, and actually, I've always been very proud in an interesting way with the people of Hawaii, because you guys, I've been watching all 50 states and the activism there, and it was always Hawaii and Vermont that were, and somewhat of California, that were like the main ones in the country. And I loved coming here in 2004, then again more recently and now, to see that quality. And I see, and I just want to honor both of you, because both of you said, hey, not on my watch. So thank you all.
Yeah, thank you. One reason I even got that pissed off is by watching his TED talk with me and my wife, and knowing that there's atrazine in our water and putting two and two together. I was like, what the? Are you kidding me? You know what I mean? It's like, and nobody's doing nothing, but it's like, I like the saying, if not us, then who?
Mm-hmm.
If not now, then when? Yeah. Or is that how it goes? I think so.
Yeah.
So, that one makes a lot of sense to me, because mm-hmm. it's like, this is that time, and we are those people, you know.
There we go. So, Jeffrey, thank you for joining us on Out of the Box. Look forward to seeing you at Common Ground, 6:30 tonight in Kilauea for folks who are interested. And also Saturday at Waimea Canyon Middle School in the evening.
6:30 to 8:30.
And you're going to be sharing tonight and on Saturday for folks who might not be familiar. What are you going to be talking about? What are listeners going to hear?
Well, typically what happens is when people come and hear a full presentation on GMOs, they choose to change their diet before the end of the talk. And they'll hear others in the audience who've already changed their diet and found tremendous benefits to their health. We will learn about the documented health risks of genetically engineered foods. And also we'll be talking a bit about what's happening on the island in terms of this vote that's happening for this charter amendment. For basically saying, not on our watch, we want to stand up and say, we need it to be proven safe before we're breathing and eating it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, and good luck in tonight's presentation and also Saturday. Michael, thank you for bringing Jeffrey on up. You got something you'd like to share? Yeah, please do.
Thank you, Jimmy. Yeah, I just had one thing. It was a very large mahalo to the community. This morning we turned in our signatures for the charter amendment to mm-hmm. get it on the ballot. There were 2,037 signatures required, and we turned in 4,026. So the community just showed up big time. The signature gatherers showed up big time. The community just stepped forward and let their voices be heard for this next step. And thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, mahalo. Big mahalos for that.
One thing we got to watch out for, though, is, what happened on Maui. I don't know if you all know, but they just announced that there was 300-something thousand votes that were names that are invalid on
right.
the ballot initiative. So it's like, we got to really be on it and contact those people and get them, all you people on Maui, you got to, know what's going on over there. They got the ballot initiative in, but they found,
a number of those
4,000 of the 9,000 or 8,000 needed. are not good. So if your names are on that, you go, you know, make it serious. You know, make it serious to go over there and take care of it. Get your name on there, and let's, you know, this is like the fight of your life. This is the fight of our lives, Hawaii. This is 100 years of desecration and poisoning, and you know, it's the same people, same companies, just different suits. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
it's,
mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, they've killed, you know, our culture. They tried to kill our culture. It's building back up hard right now. And it's been for a long time, but now more than ever, if you know what's going on in the Hawaiian movement, there's a lot of heavy stuff going on right now, you know what I mean? And it's all becoming transparent, and people are really hooing up and coming together. So it's not just the GMO issue, it's not just this issue, that issue. There's a lot of issues going on, and there's a lot of uniting going on, and there's a lot of, you know, solidarity.
Coming together.
Amen.
Coming together. And so, Michael, thank you for helping to organize the petition drive, and for folks who haven't signed but would still like to sign, is there still an opportunity for them?
Yes, there's still. We'll continue to collect signatures, because the process is they will take 4 weeks or so to
go through those,
evaluate
numbers,
and see what they throw out and what they keep.
Mm-hmm.
We're at double what we need right now, but once they give us a number, there's another window down the road in about a month and a half where we'll have an additional 2 weeks to turn in more signatures if required.
And so, it could be anything as simple that you put the Social Security number, the last four numbers didn't match up, or your voting address might have been incorrect, that you didn't give them the updated current one.
Do they give you that information of what was wrong on those?
They will give it that. In fact, we're allowed to observe the process.
Uh-huh.
So.
Terrific.
Thank God.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Michael. So tonight, 5:30 at Common Ground, and then also on Saturday, the 24th of May at Waimea Canyon Middle School from 6:30, 8 o'clock.
That's correct.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Dr. Tyrone Hayes, before we go, I wanted to just, because you mentioned last night, and I think a lot of our listeners might not be aware of, you know, that you were hired by Syngenta to look at their product, atrazine, and then when you found that the product safety was questionable, or that there were impacts that hadn't been discovered before, Syngenta decided not to continue the funding for your program. Can you speak a little bit about that and the challenge that you were faced to disclose or not to disclose, to go along, to get along, or to kind of buck the tide and become a rebel? And, you know, because that's the brother you are. I really appreciated last night's presentation in such a light way, but the seriousness of it. And again, mahalo to Dustin for stepping up. But you stepped up in a huge way. Your career was threatened. Your livelihood was threatened, yet you didn't buckle. So please share with listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was already a non-tenured professor at the University of California, Berkeley, when the manufacturer, they were Novartis back then, approached me. And they were funding my research and funding my time to study atrazine, which, by the way, despite what you might read on the internet, the only people who have ever paid me personally to study atrazine is the manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
I produced results from my research that they didn't like, showing that atrazine caused demasculinization of frogs, feminization of frogs, and they proceeded to try to squash those data. They first tried to, you know, get me to manipulate the data. They tried to manipulate the data statistically. Then they tried to, you know, embarrass me, saying that we had done something wrong, that we had analyzed things incorrectly, that we had misinterpreted data. When they failed there, then they brought in other scientists claiming that they couldn't replicate our data. And then when they failed at that, they launched a campaign, which is now public. They're now handwritten documents where they launched a campaign when they spent millions of dollars and couldn't find a problem with the science that I produced, that my laboratory produced. Then they attacked me personally, and they included things in their own handwriting, plans to investigate me, to investigate my wife, to investigate my students.
To trap you.
To trap me. You know, they literally wrote down, set a trap, you know, to investigate. You know, they sent private investigators around. They sent psychologists around to analyze me. They followed me around. They took notes about what I wore, where I went, how I spoke, whether or not I took my coat off.
How did that affect your day-to-day living? What was that like at the peak of this kind of like hecticness?
Well, it was crazy because I knew what was going on, because they eventually got to the point where one of their employees would come up to me when I was lecturing or testifying and whisper threats into my ear. They would, you know, he would threaten me with violence. He would threaten me with sexual assault with my wife and my daughter. You know, he would say things like, your wife and daughter are home alone. Why aren't you protecting them? How do you know what's happening with your wife and daughter? You know, so really, you know, I'm saying really
head
sort
games,
of lewd and crude
but very significant in regards to,
but
there you go, psychological terrorism.
Psychological terrorism, absolutely.
Oh,
and they, you know, and now I've known this, you know, I knew this was going on, but now I can talk about it because these documents have been revealed. Well, they actually wrote this down and they're actually now copies. I mean, I actually have access now to emails where their lawyer and their PR firm were emailing this guy and saying, you know, congratulations, you know, what are your plans to intimidate me or actually document it?
Mm-hmm.
So now I can talk about these things. And
how liberating is that?
You know, I always describe it as the following. It's like when you hear this story about somebody who was accused of murder and was in jail for 10 years, and then they do the DNA analysis and figure out it wasn't him. And, of course, you're delighted because you're like, okay, now, woo, now everybody knows.
Yeah.
But you've also been in jail for 10 years.
Yes. Right?
Yeah.
You know? Through hell.
Paying you back for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's right. So, you know, I mean, people have said, you know, you could sue them for libel. You know, they were stalking you. You could sue them for, you know, criminal charges.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's not where I come from.
Mm-hmm.
What I got for them, you know, they're going to get theirs. They're getting theirs now.
They're getting theirs now.
Because they screwed up. They wrote this down. They're the ones who really put this all on the table.
That's right.
And it clearly shows for these companies, it's not about the science. It's about bullying. It's about trying to destroy people who are trying to do the right thing. And in terms of what I did, I never set out to be any kind of hero or ethical this and that. It's just about what's right. It's just about how my parents and my grandmother raised me.
Because that's
it's
a brother that
right.
you...
That's
you,
just the kind of brother I am.
That's it. You know, and I appreciate that both of you guys being real up front and sacrificing.
That's just that kind of brother I am.
it's true.
And I
just want to, you know, acknowledge that and honor that. I think the question from Maggie about, you know, to what extent will the industry try to influence the outcome of this election?
I wouldn't doubt anything from threatening my life to, to, you know, shooting at me, to trying to ruin me, to looking for anything they possibly can, you know, and I mean,
the millions of dollars they spent on anti-labeling initiatives.
Oh, of course, but the funny thing is I don't have too much to hide, and anything that I do, I have no shame about. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So it's like...
Bring it.
Yeah, bring it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm ready to be as transparent about my life as anybody you've ever seen, so...
And I think that this is an important part of if you will, the movement's progress. That you know, again, you know, we shine the bright light into those dark corners.
Yeah, you know, we can go and talk about their people too, and really talk about what their issues are and their addictions and bad things. But we're not gonna go there. You know what I mean? Because we don't. You know what I mean? It's politics and it's crazy and it's dirty and they'll do anything they can to take you out. But it's like. You don't need to go there, you know what I mean? Us, we all on the same canoe on this island. We just paddling together and you know, the direction we're going is positive and the direction we're going is into the light. Out of the darkness and into the light.
There we go. Do we have a phone call, Tim? We're ready. Sorry, but caller, are you still there? Hello, caller, are you there? Uh-oh. There we go.
Yes, I am.
Okay, caller, thank you for being patient and joining us. Dustin Barca and Tyrone Hayes on the air with you.
First off, I think it's been a great show tonight. It's been fun to listen to. One of the things, and it's more directed toward Dr. Hayes, when the attorney who authored the initiative called in asking about the EPA, my understanding is that the EPA gives preliminary approval for studying of the chemical based on some studies that they do to prove that the experiment's safe, and then requires the experimenter, the companies, to turn in data. And that was done for atrazine, I believe, in 1974. So what I think a major issue is there's not an advancement of knowledge or acceptance that things that were anticipated to get the study going may have been appropriate at that time, but as you accumulate more knowledge, such as mixing different chemicals, the effect on different creatures, not just human lethality, there's not an adjustment by the EPA. and the compliance. And what I see is it's whatever was accepted to get the preliminary approval, they call science. Any acceptance of further knowledge that comes from user experience is ridiculed, and they try to crush that. Am I wrong in that observation?
Well, in chemicals like atrazine, for example, the chemical actually went on the market before the EPA existed. So atrazine was introduced in 1958. The EPA didn't exist until 1972. So there were no required studies to get it on the market. What happens is if the industry or anybody discovers that there's something pertinent to atrazine, you know, as new science is developed, they're required to actually submit that information to the EPA. The company was in violation, and I'm going to say this here on the air, was in violation. They had data from me showing that atrazine had an adverse effect that they didn't submit. I think it's called the 602 violation or something like that. So they were supposed to submit that. And one of the things I read in my talk last night is that the EPA acknowledged that the manufacturer sat on data that they didn't submit the data. The EPA acknowledged that fact and knew that fact, and let the company slide, for example. And I think that's way too often the case, that companies are in violation and they kind of do some, you know, backroom handshaking with the agency and they're allowed to get away with that. There was also something when I was working for Syngenta called a data call-in, where everybody was supposed to submit their data so the EPA could reevaluate, and Syngenta, the manufacturer, didn't send in all the data that they had. I know that for a fact because they never submitted, until I was approached and spoke up, they never submitted data that I know they had in their hands. And then when they did, they manipulated that data and its interpretation, and the EPA allowed them to get away with that.
And it doesn't seem like there's an independent desire by the EPA, or not a desire. The practicality is that the EPA doesn't independently study it. And so when I was talking about 1974, I think that's when the EPA made their standard on acceptable levels of atrazine in the water. And I don't think it's budged off that mark because of a lot of what you're saying. They get data. The companies choose not to send it in. It's in violation of the contract that they have with the EPA, yet it exists. And a lot of people say, well, the government's, the EPA, we go through these rigorous standards, the EPA's monitoring, but in fact, they're not.
Oh, my gosh, I'm hitting the wrong button at the wrong time. Sorry about that, Larry. You still there?
I'm here.
Okay, sorry about that. The acoustic luau kind of cut you off in the middle of your sentence there.
Oh, I think I was done. I was just curious. I just get a kick out of the company saying, well, we go through rigorous standards when they're archaic standards. And again, atrazine, the EPA ruled on that nearly 20 years after they developed it, and they made those standards. But they haven't gone back. And then when people submit fine data, the companies don't turn it in. The justification of the companies is, well, we go through these rigorous standards, and I don't believe that. I don't believe that the EPA does do the oversight because they don't independently research unless they're informed by the person submitting the data that there's a problem and that it's difficult to get that bad data to the EPA.
Yeah, no, the regulatory branch of the EPA has no teeth, and they are really under extreme influence from the industry, and that's got to change if they're going to be effective.
It sure seems like it. I know that the issues with the neonicotinoid family class of poisons is under more scrutiny now than ever before, and the evidence is suggesting that, you know, the EPA has been derelict and not giving the due process of looking at the harms that this is causing. Larry, any last questions or comments?
No, I thoroughly enjoyed what you guys were discussing tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. I got to do this one really quick here because Maren's in the house. She's pacing, waiting for that 6 o'clock time, and it's almost there. So be patient, folks, because Acoustic Luau is coming right up.
Hey, aloha. This is Marin, inviting you to tune in to KKCR on Thursday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. for Acoustic Luau, featuring the best of contemporary singer-songwriters, acoustic blues, rock, gospel, and world beat. It's all about great music, a delectable selection of tasty sound treats. That's Acoustic Luau, Thursdays, 6 to 8 p.m., right here on KKCR.
There we go. So we're back on the air. The last 8 minutes of the Out of the Box show with mayoral candidate Dustin Barca. I want to let folks know that County Council candidate Felicia Cowden, she will be hosting three events. One Friday night, May 23rd, from 3:30 to 6 p.m. It's at the Church of the Pacific. Please bring a small donation to their food bank if you can. This is to meet Felicia Cowden, who's a county council candidate. Also, that evening will be concert with John Cruz. That's Friday night, Friday afternoon, 3:30 to 6 p.m., May 23rd. The following day in Waimea Baptist Church from 2:30 to 5 p.m., that's Saturday the 24th. This is going to be another opportunity to talk story with Felicia Cowden, County Council candidate, and John Cruz will be providing some musical entertainment, and then capping their weekend community engagement at Poipu Beach Park on the 25th. That's Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. Down at the beach park, John Cruz again will be providing entertainment. Felicia Cowden will be providing some content to talk about issues. So if you want to learn more about Felicia's campaign and her candidacy, you can check that out at Church Pacific on Friday, Waimea Baptist Church on Saturday, and the Poipu Beach Park on Sunday the 25th. Dustin Barca, your run for Kauai is starting when again?
Yeah, the run for mayor will be starting Thursday the 29th. We'll be sailing the Napali coast and landing at Polahali. I'll be running from Polahali that day, Thursday, to Waimea. We'll have an event, just mahalo the supporters in the community, and you know, pay my respects to the community, and you know, we'll be running throughout the whole island throughout the whole weekend, and ending in Hanalei on the 1st in the afternoon. We're gonna have a big party down there, some good music, good food for everybody. I just want to mahalo everybody for the support, and you know, the reason for this run is, you know, it's just to pay respect to the people of the island, and shine light on some of the issues, and shine light on some of the places that we want to restore and bring back, you know. And just want to thank everybody for the support. Anybody who's planning on coming out and standing on the road to, you know, support me and support me in any other way, you know, we really appreciate it. And just a big mahalo.
Right on. And barcaformayor.org.
Yeah, we got Barca, the number 4, mayor.com. You can go see what we're all about, what our dreams are for the island. And if you want to donate, you can go on there. It's, you know, a dollar, and our limit's 4,000. And we appreciate any cent that you give us. And you know, we'll be doing our best to do right for you as the
mahalo
people.
Appreciate that, Dustin. You'll be back here on air, I'm sure, in the future when we have Mayor Carvalho, Miss Debs Carvalho as well, who will be running. Also, I think there's another candidate, John Hoff, might be pulling his papers. So hopefully KKCR will be providing some more opportunity for our candidates for office. If you're a candidate and you would like to come in, talk story, please give us a call at 826-7771 or 7774 and schedule some time like Dustin did. That's something that we want to be providing our community, is access to our candidates and help engage our community in the campaign season. Dr. Tyrone Hayes, you're flying off to Idaho in the near future. Mahalo again for joining us here on Out of the Box, but more importantly, joining our community statewide on a tour that took you from Oahu, Molokai, the Big Island, Kona Side, Maui. Now you're here in beautiful Princeville. Thanks again for joining us. Any final thoughts or comments that you have for us that you would like to share before departing?
I'll just thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure. Stay strong, stay united, and keep looking towards a cleaner environment, cleaner, better health for us and everyone around us.
Oh, mahalos for that. Christy, any words you want to share with us? There we go. Well, we'll get some more on that. And, Tim, thanks so much for manning the phones. Apologize for all the calls that we weren't able to get, the fat fingers of mine and the split fingers of Tim. The phones were just a little bit funky. And, Maren, we're going to have you here in a second. Stay tuned for the Acoustic Luau coming back up. And a week from today, you'll be listening to Jonathan Jay and Dave Giroux. I'm sure they'll be having something good for you. We're going to go out with this one, All Hawaii Stand Together by Liko Martin.
Phew.